Joe McMillan, and this is an interview with my good friend, former fire chief of the Louisville Fire Department, Larry Bonifon, a longtime friend from Highland Park. This is the afternoon, evening, 6/5/3/24/1995. Good evening, Larry. How are you today?
Fine, Dr. McMillan.
This interview is going to be on your interest, enthusiasm, and commitment to the horse racing industry. First, I'd like for you to state your full name.
Larry Maurice Bonifon.
And where were you born?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, Jefferson County, December 1, 1936.
So that puts you up there around, what, 58 years old, right? Closing in on 60. Your family, would you tell me a little bit about them, your brothers and sisters, that is your family of orientation, that is, the one you grew up in?
All right. Being born and raised in Louisville, my mother's family original Highland Park members from the original settlement of Highland Park. I have five brothers, no sisters. My father's from New Orleans, Louisiana, and that's my origin.
Okay, now your family of creation, and that is your family, your own family. You've been married, right?
Yes,
I'm married. How many children?
I'm married in 1956. I have five children. The youngest now is 27 years old. Two boys, three girls. They all reside in Louisville, with the exception of my oldest son, who is a career in the United States Marine Corps, first lieutenant, 14 years service.
And tell me a little bit about your education, where you went to school.
Grammar school was in the Highland Park community, into the junior system at Jackson Junior High School, then to Central High School. I was one of the last freshman classes of the old Central at 8th and Chestnut Street, and was the first sophomore class in the current Central building located at 12th and Chestnut.
So you graduated from the new Central then, right?
I graduated 1954 from Central High School in Louisville, Kentucky.
Let's talk a little bit about your family and your neighborhood, Highland Park, of course, being close to the racetrack, and how you got interested in the racetrack. Were any of your family members into horse racing?
Well, this began, I'd say, from my grandparents on both sides of the family. Both grandfathers were horsemen. My father's father was a horseman at the fairgrounds in New Orleans. His brothers and he had careers with racing. My mother's father was an ex-rider here in Kentucky, whose children, especially the males, were horsemen. My grandmother, his wife, run a track kitchen, first at Douglas Park Racetrack in South Louisville, and at their home on Pocahontas Street, which is now Woodlawn Avenue.
So your whole family has been involved in horse racing, and it goes back generations.
It goes back through generations. As far as I can remember as a child, it was all horses.
And then, of course, being from the neighborhood of Highland Park and being so close to Douglas Park, I'm sure that's probably where you first got your first interest, your major interest as far as you were concerned?
That appeared to be like the playground, our environment. Quite naturally, we was with the racing family association, so it was just like destined to be a part of it. I recall as a very small child being at the racetrack. Care and raising of horses was a goal to learn and be efficient and productive in that area. Even in as my high school days, my thoughts were really more associated with racing than my education at that time.
And of course, that's natural, though. I had the same kind of background, so I understand what you're talking about. In other words, you were just caught up in the horse racing.
Caught up in it, yes. Yeah.
When did you first get involved in working on the racetrack?
Well, from a child, as I say, the parents involved in association with racing, either from the trackside kitchen to actually breaking yearlings, training horses, riding horses. My desire was to continue into that, you know, that field. I recall when walking horses, that was maybe the first step in learning the game, that I was quite small.
About how old were you at that time?
I would think within my first years of school, I would say 7, 8, 9 years old, I felt that I knew a lot about, you know, raising horses, working with horses. I was never afraid of them. Again, I have one brother who is approximately 5 years older. He was really my idol. He could ride, and I wanted to grow up to ride.
What was his name, man?
That's Luther. Luther Jr. Yes, that's my oldest brother. And then I'm the next in line. I have one 2 years younger than I, who is a horseman. And
that's Ed Lee.
Edward Lee, right. Yes. And through his career, he has been only a trainer. One of the first and only black that I know that has raced horses, trained horses that raced at Churchill Downs under the ownership of Calumet Farm.
Yeah, and so and then you have a younger brother, Sam, is still on the racetrack, doing exercise. He's one of the few black exercise boys left.
Yeah,
right. Right?
Sam,
and also is a jockey.
He is one of the few black licensed jockeys in the state of Kentucky. Sam has been riding since he was 16 years old, been riding races. He rode at various tracks around the country, including Ellis Park, River Downs, Oakland Park, Tropical Park in Florida, Detroit Race Course. Just a number. Those ones I know of.
Sam is the youngest of all of your family?
No, there's one younger than Sammy. There's one 2 years younger than Sammy, John, who had a very short span career in racing. He being the youngest, after high school, he went into the Air Force and completed 4 years in the Air Force. He resides now in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he's the only one in the family got away from racing.
So when did you take your first official job on the racetrack? And who did you start working for?
I think that goes back to the fact that it was seemingly a lifetime thing from my early involvement that I can't really say who actually I worked for. Generally, it would be someone who, a family member, whether uncle, father, someone closely associated with the family who was, we mostly would tutor under, along with some of the trainers, ex-riders who frequent the home. As I said, my grandmother run the track kitchen.
So you just went around.
It was just like.
So you just sort of naturally gravitated into it then.
Yeah.
But you have worked for various people throughout your career,
the
right?
The first actual job that I remember would be during the summer season when after school we were, it was really stressed from the family that you attend school. I played hooky one time and I was a freshman in high school when I done it and was caught, was disciplined for that action and it never occurred again. However, at 15 years old, I made my first trip away from home with horses. At that time, it was a owner and trainer here, Dr. A.F. Lloyd, who was a dentist. I worked for him, being taught the procedure to excellent groom.
So you started with him, with Lloyd as a groom.
I would leave following the end of the school season and would stay the summer in Detroit or Cleveland at Randall Park in Cleveland or Detroit Racecourse in Detroit, Michigan to about maybe a week or two prior to school starting in September. I'd come home and go back to school.
So that was like the summer job for you.
It was summer.
Every
job,
summer,
it was
all during high school?
Yes, during my entire career.
And after you graduate from high school, did you take a job somewhere?
Upon graduating from high school, I worked on the racetrack. I worked for, at that time, Graham Brown Stable, J. Graham Brown here of Louisville. They had a farm here, breeder, owner, and I was employed there with some of the people that I've known all my life, the elder people, including my brother. For 1 year, the summer of 54 through the summer of 1955, I was employed at with Graham Brown Racing Stables. We raced that year in Chicago, at Arlington, Washington, and Hawthorne race courses.
Who was the trainer for Brown?
There's two trainers. One was Harold Willett, who was a former Howland Park associate and Douglas Park trainer, who I'd known from a child. And then J.C. Howard, mm-hmm. Who took the stable over prior to Mr. Perosha.
Willard and Howard had the horses of Brown before Perosha took
right,
over.
Right.
Did you ever work for Perosha?
As a child, from as long as I can remember, I was around his stable. Mr. and Mrs. Perosha had a tendency to take on children, give an instruction of respect, dignity, and teaching. You know, I think these things, they help most high. And if you did not conduct yourself in a proper manner as a young gentleman, then you will run off from them.
That's right.
But the teaching that they give was just excellent.
So your background and mine about the same on that one, because I was one of his proteges also.
Oh yes, the desire.
In fact, everybody
be,
that
the desire to be around him was overwhelming because the things that they taught you and being skilled horsemen was a desire for the young men in those days. I think that we look forward to be considered, you know, knowing the game, knowing the horse and how to train and work with the horse.
Now then, I know that you went into the fire department somewhere along the way there. About when was that? When you
all right, I was as I said, I continued employment after high school with Brown Hotel Racing Stable. The fall of 1955, the races had completed the racing season in Kentucky at Churchill Downs. The stable was moving for winter racing season in New Orleans, Louisiana. They were shipping out on Thanksgiving Day. That's the day my career ended. Had it been the day before Thanksgiving, or maybe the day after Thanksgiving, I may have gone with the stable to New Orleans to race. But I didn't want to leave home on Thanksgiving Day, and I quit at the racetrack while they was loading the horses on the van.
Isn't that something?
My brother, who was foreman on the job at that time, became perturbed with me because he and I had both left home with mother and said we were gone, you know, we were on our way to New Orleans and said our goodbyes. And in about 2 hours, I come back in the house.
You just weren't going to give up Thanksgiving dinner.
No,
with the family.
And thinking of the traditional Central football game that had been a part of me. At that time, my girlfriend, who became my wife, was one of the attendants for Miss Central that year. And I was determined I was going to be home on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, that was the days when Central's Thanksgiving was just like a big festival.
Right.
That band.
We looked forward to that every year from over the years.
So then after that, did you take a job?
I was informed that day by my mother that if I stayed at home, I would have to be employed. Following that, a trainer on the racetrack was aware of my job seeking and told me that he had read in the newspaper, the Courier Journal, that the Louisville Fire Department had dropped the recruiting age from 21 years old to 19, and he thought it might be good if I'd go down there and make an application to be a firefighter. Taking him up on that, just to please, I made application and was accepted into the Louisville Fire Department December 15, 1955.
And then you worked all the way up from a fireman to become the fire chief.
Yes, my career spanned 31 years. I had opportunity to serve in every phase of the fire service that the city offered other than communication. That's, the radio operators who dispatch companies. I began as a private on a aeroladder company. Within 10 years, I was promoted to fire apparatus operator, which is sergeant. Within 5 years, I was a lieutenant in charge of company personnel under the supervisory of a captain. Then I made captain. The dates evade me at this time, but within 20 years, I was a captain in the fire department. I was appointed assistant chief at a administration change from a retired chief. The new chief asked if I would serve as assistant chief under his administration. This is an appointment. At that time, I was the competitive examination through civil service was given up to the rank of major. Mm-hmm. That is district chief in charge of one of the three districts in the city. I was number one on the list for the promotion to major from captain when that appointment arrived. That was in 1976. Mm-hmm. I was appointed assistant chief, placed in charge of personnel. Might say the Louisville Fire Department at that time had plus 600 members, approximately 530 or 540 was firefighting or fire suppression forces. I served 1 year as assistant chief in that capacity. Due to retirement, I was appointed deputy chief. Second in command of the Louisville Fire Department in 1978. I served 1 year as deputy chief, and then had been appointed as acting chief by then Mayor Horace Sloan. Due to a sudden illness of the chief, who recommended that I would be appointed as acting chief till he was able to come back to duty. He was off almost a year, at least 8 months, as I served in the acting capacity as chief. And when he come back to duty, the administration changed. There was a new mayor elected under the name of Stansberry, mm-hmm. who considered my appointment to remain as chief, which he did, appointed me as chief. I served through his administration. Mayor Sloan was re-elected second term as mayor, and he continued my appointment as fire chief through his administration.
Now, during the time that you were in the fire department, what about your interest in horses? Did it wane at all, or kept it going?
Somehow, the interest, my dedication to the fire service was my first concern. However, with family members, my environment still associated with racing, whenever I would have vacation, I would select my vacation period that would correspond with the spring or fall meetings at Churchill Downs, and would actually come and take job position working with the horses through the duration of my vacation.
So as close as you had two things going then,
as
right?
As close as I can remember, the first 17 years of my career, every vacation was taken at the track.
Yeah. And all during the time you were on vacation, you were working with the horses.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you never lost the interest in the horse.
Never lost the connection.
As you think back on your career, and you had two careers, really. I mean, of course, all of us who've been around racehorses love racehorses and love to be around them. But as you think back, who were some of the people that you would consider to be some of the top African Americans in the horse industry? That is, at not only at the groom level, but also at the exercise boy and the trainer level. Who are some of the ones who you consider to be outstanding grooms, outstanding exercise boys, outstanding horse people, outstanding jockeys, and what have you?
Well, I think every child would have considered a role model in effect, but being involved in racing, thoroughbred industry from such a young age, it goes back to some of the old timers who I'd even heard about that had actual opportunities to be around these people. That goes back to say some of the older trainers, Mr. Buckner, called Hun Buckner, right, back in the years, who was also a neighbor, lived within two doors from me, who was one of the great teachers in the game.
Right, I know him.
Nathan Cantrell.
Know him.
Mr. Sitgraves, Carl Sitgraves. It just goes back to, as far as I can remember, some of the older persons. In that time, there was a lot of nicknames associated.
Now we're on again. I'm sorry for the interruption, but you were talking before the phone rang there about some of the old timers that you knew in horse racing.
Some of the names that I try to recollect were really nicknames. You didn't always know a person's given name. For instance, there were people like Pretty Babe.
Oh, I know him. Yeah.
Liquor Ben. This
Pretty Babe. Pretty Babe was an exercise boy.
Yes, he was with Calumet Farm for a number of years. Yeah. One of the top exercise riders
of all time.
Some of the greatest horses that Calumet raced. Yeah. These people were associated with the major stables. During those years, most of your racing owners were top of the line. For instance, Calumet Farm, Green Tree Stables, C.B. Whitney. These are the kind of outfits that my relatives or we were associated with.
Yeah.
Today you have single small stables, two or three horses, but during that time, everyone worked for racing under the big name stables. Even your riders had to be contract riders as apprentice. And, you know, it's a big change that has come into racing from that day. It was really traditional, truly the sport of kings in those years.
Yeah.
And being associated with those names kind of land a lot of prestige to what you were doing.
Did you ever know any black jockeys in those days?
Yes, there were several black riders that I was acquainted with from their apprenticeship, which would include, but not limited to, Alan Myers, who we call Q-Ball.
Mm-hmm.
This person was under apprenticeship of Mr. Perosha.
Right.
James Blackburn, who also was under the apprenticeship of Mr. Perosha. And by the way, James Blackburn's father was a retired Louisville firefighter, mm-hmm. whom I met after his retirement. He had been retired some years prior to my entry into the Louisville Fire Department, but becoming acquainted with him and knowing his son before I knew him, it just made the bond even closer to racing.
Blackburn
and
was
dual
an
career.
Excellent rider too, wasn't he?
Yes, James Blackburn went to the California area and done well in racing as a rider, not excluding here in Kentucky and Ohio circuit.
Yeah. What are you, during your years around in those days, there were lots of blacks working on the racetrack in various capacities. How do you compare blacks working on the track at that time, say in the 50s and 60s, to what's going on right now?
There's been a major demise of the blacks' involvement in racing as I would know it. At the time, in my early career, it was almost totally black in the grooming and exercise and training of thoroughbreds during those years. Today, you see very few and exceptionally
very few young people coming in to learn the game.
And how, what do you attribute that to, the demise of the young blacks getting interested in horse racing? Because others have come in and taken jobs, and people are hiring Hispanics and girls and that kind of thing? What just the lack of interest on the part of the young blacks?
Well, that too, but I think that there, after so many years of, even as myself, I've worked with and tutored, helped young white who were introduced to racing, either as riders, coming in and making trainers, and some even owners. And the opportunities that was afforded the black seemed to have been far and few between. You see the young white coming in totally unaware of the racing industry, and in a matter of a few years, opportunities had opened to them that made it profitable for them to continue their careers, when the African American that mostly almost tutored, or just took that person in hand and taught them what they knew, was often left behind, what at whatever age level.
So in other words, what you're saying is the opportunity structure wasn't.
I think that had a lot to do with it, especially in racing in Kentucky. As we know that the area of the bluegrass region of Kentucky, the Lexington, Fayette County area, was predominantly all horsemen, particularly in the black community. And we find now that even few in that area have interest in racing. Those that have there's been a major exodus from the career area, you know, in racing for the black, you know, all over this part of the state. And I attribute to the opportunities that were afforded. You have some excellent horsemen who, after a few years, just decided this, you know, I have no chance here. I think I pursue a career somewhere else.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and you're the first person that really I've interviewed that really put that exactly the way it is, that the lack of opportunity.
I personally felt that way. I have, there was quite a hassle in my career selection. Even though I felt real good about the fire service and the opportunity it afforded me, but as a family person, after 1 year in the Louisville Fire Department, I was married. And then my family began to grow from that point. My true gut feeling was still with horses.
Yeah.
I felt that I had the talents to develop into a successful trainer in the business, but due
and
to I do feel that way, but yeah. Again, the opportunities and the things, even witnessing some of the trials and circumstances that the black has to overcome, I was tutored by some of the top trainers, Mr. Scott, Mr. Contrail, that could, you know, actually told me, you're a good horseman. You're going to make a good horseman. You learn, you catch on, you like the animal. And I feel that same way today, but I've witnessed so many of my friends are people that I knew that was in that field be limited to such opportunities that it was, in a sense, discouraging. I didn't feel like...
Do you think that has a lot to do with how some of our friends, for example, who've been around the racetrack 25, 30, 40 years old, 40 years, lost interest and then go into alcohol and other pursuits? Do you think that has a lot to do with that?
Oh, yes. I think within any area, whether it be... military down, I think that when a person feels that their usefulness is not accepted or their opportunities are not presented, just in a semblance of what they're able to see every day, that it would begin to take the interest away, their, they would, you know, deteriorate.
Become disenchanted.
And go in so many directions. Excellent horsemen that we have known have taken that rap.
Right, and if you see them not walking the streets around, some of them barred off the racetrack and all that kind of thing, and some of the best grooms, for example, in this community, right, South Louisville, are walking the streets doing nothing.
Oh, yes.
And as a result, do you see the health on the... We were talking about the quality of the health, that is, at the hot walker, groom, exercise boy level, compared to 20, 30 years ago and now. You see a decline in that?
Yes, I think it's general. I think that even the skills of the owners and their interest toward racing has been somewhat commercialized to the point of, you know, the care for the animal becomes almost secondary. The veterinarians in racing, I never seen in my lifetime the number of veterinarians on the grounds doing training hours or during the racing season. Years ago, the care was given to the groom and the trainers to deal with various illnesses or situation with horses.
And in some ways the grooms and the trainers knew more about the horses than the vet.
Oh yes,
even the vets are trained in the school.
The care of horses, the natural care of the horse. Today, you know, the veterinarian seems to be the basic support of horses' careers. The work ethics of the all levels, from the hot walker through the trainer, has dramatically changed. The skills that they learn as far as caring for, training, and raising horses has differed. There's been a major influx with females into racing. Not that some of your better grooms, trainers are not females, but during the time of my beginning into racing, my introduction into racing, there was very few females involved in racing. The Hispanic community has infiltrated racing, which seemed to lower the skill standards. You have some very good riders from that area and from that, you know, the Hispanic people, but then the grooms and hot walkers now have just really taken over racing. It seems to have pushed the black completely out of racing in and around Kentucky.
You think a lot of that has to do with owners and trainers trying to get cheaper help?
Very definite. The economics play a great part in this.
So you can bring in someone from Mexico who may or may not be a citizen, sometimes an illegal, and bring them in and work them for less money. Oh. And then, of course, working them for less money, that's more money in your pot.
Very definitely. I think that it's historically and within the past few years, some of the major racing stables throughout the country, including California, New York, Kentucky, Florida, has been investigated by the federal government for having workers that were, you know, was not, citizens. They had no right to be employed, in the states. And there have been major fines for some of your major trainers, throughout the industry.
Yeah, you see it,
including Whittingham, Lucas, just about any name major trainers in almost any state where major racing is conducted.
Have used illegal aliens.
Have used illegal aliens.
Been brought to court.
Consequently, lower pay scales, more work. Back as a child, a good groom was given no more than three horses to care for.
Right.
These horses were cared for.
That's right.
Today, there are grooms with four, five, or more. And with time limits even different, less time spent at the track, on the job. So quite naturally, it deteriorates the care of the animal. Again, the animal is mostly supported by veterinarians, and the racing careers of possibly great horses has been shortened to maybe 3 years, a 3 year season for racing.
Do you think, what about the use of drugs on the racetrack? Well, how do you feel about that? You know, I notice sometimes that horses, when they're maiden, they'll start the first race there, they're on basics, on butte. Well, how do you feel about the use of drugs?
It goes back to the involvement of the veterinary medicine in racing to accelerate the horse's career, beginning very young, going for the build up in the purse structure for racing, to get what you can and get out of the way, move another one in. There was time when in Kentucky racing, following the spring and fall seasons, there was no racing in the state,
right,
and in most states. And the winter quarters would be to rehabilitate the horses, break yearlings, break new horses to come into racing, giving time and developing those skills. Today it's just mass movement. Everybody's in a hurry.
They want to make money.
Right.
Fast.
It's commercial.
Yeah, and I think drugs has a lot to do with that.
Oh, yes. Drugs has
a lot to
do with it.
Put a horse on drugs, you think he's going to make him run faster. Not always it does make him run faster either, does it?
Oh, no, not at all. But what it does, it there is a lot of what I would consider off the top is painkillers, the kind of things that you would normally give a horse 30, 60 days to overcome some ailment, when you could give the drug and 24 hours you send him back out there to do what needed to be done. There again, a lot of great horses have never made it over their three-year-old career, which is just the beginning of their racing careers, because of that. And I think it weakens the breeding industry. I don't think the horses have the stamina that some that we knew as children had,
Now we talk about horses. Who are some of the great horses that you've seen in your lifespan? As you look back, who would you consider to be some of the top horses?
Oh, there would go back. When I could really tie into, say, the great horses that I've actually seen or been around, would go back again to some of the major stables who had horses. Like, I recall being around the barn in the mornings when Calumet, Miss Pretty Babe, was there as an exercise rider. Calumet had a horse called Citation and a stablemate named Cold Town. I remember being in the barns in the morning. I recall that particular Derby day that these horses run. And
they ran 1-2 in the Derby.
Yes, and two great horses. So many. My uncle was working for C.B. Whitney when they had the horse Native Dancer.
Oh, yeah.
My father and brother was associated with Henry Forrest Stables when they had Kiowa King.
Who won the Derby?
All these are Derby winners. Some horses that maybe didn't fare as well in the Derby that went on to be champions in their careers that I've had association with. There's so many it's hard to name.
Who would you consider to be some of the top jockeys that you've ever known? As you look back.
To actually be, to have known riders that I have sat and had, talked with, worked with, and been closely associated goes back to names like Hardtack, W.L. Johnson, Willie Lee Johnson, John Adams, John L. Rott,
right.
John Sellers. These are from Rott, Sellers, Hardtack, these guys were almost in my age group, within 2 to 3 years of age group. And as they were apprenticed prior to their actually riding in sanctioned races, we hung around together. We went to the track kitchen together to eat. They had to learn to muck the stalls. They had to walk horses. We had to clean tack together. And we seen these young men, not only were, for instance, my brothers as good as exercise riders as they were, but the opportunity was presented to the white boy who went on as apprentice to make it.
My
brother Samuel was under contract by a local trainer and owner here who owns horses and races here in Kentucky today. Jack Fuchs, who has two sons who rode. He took contract from my brother at 16 years old and took him to Ellis Park where he rode for him. Mm-hmm. But that was an exception to the rule. I mean, it was many young black who were good horsemen, from every level.
Never had an opportunity. So back again to the opportunity structure being open in front of them. As we wind down in this interview, I wanted you just to tell me about the future of African Americans as you see it in horse racing. You were talking a little bit about the past, but is there a future in horse racing for African Americans? And if there is, what do you think needs to be done in order to make for that future? The other thing I wanted you to talk a little bit about was the advent of some of the entertainers and the athletes who have the big money, African Americans, and who invest in horses and come in at the top level. And how do you see that?
So your first question, I believe that the opportunity for the blacks in racing today would definitely be ownership and to support from that area. However, I think with the quality and opportunity for higher education, there are opportunities for black in the other area of racing, the commissions and activities within the administration of racetracks throughout the country. I think that having the qualifications and presenting those qualifications puts the industry on a particular circumstance where they have to consider these people. As far as actually dealing with thoroughbreds and in the racing. I think that the opportunities for new trainers, young trainers coming in without the support of owners who, say for instance, some of our entertainers, sport figures, the people who can afford racing, to afford owning stables of quality horses, must present these opportunities before it can escalate from the point it is now. I think we see it daily where major trainers throughout the industry who has supportive assistant trainers, in a period of 4 or 5 years, these young white assistant trainers are given stables of horses from prominent owners who have opportunity to run, you know, have quality horses. And you wonder what happened to the black guy that taught them all they knew.
That's right.
Yet they are still there, some of them. We know a lot of retirees from the racetrack with 30, 40 years that have been in racing that we knew were skilled horsemen who seemingly don't even have interest in racing anymore for some reason. I think that's basically what happened. And we know of some of our major black trainers throughout the country who either were able to afford to purchase or own their own horses, or was associated with persons in the industry that was a close relationship that let them take horses to train and, you know, race for them. But to just to come up under the broad umbrella, I think the chances for blacks in racing now has to go toward the administrative side and work its way back down.
Yeah, now you're younger than I, and you're not quite 60 yet, and you retired from the fire department. I see you work around the racetrack. What are your interests right now? What are your goals?
Over the years in the association with family members, particularly brothers, we have owned horses, raced. They train, and I supportive in whatever I could be. Supportive to my brothers that rides, and I feel that given the opportunity economically, I would continue a venture. I always love the game. My involvement being that I would rather be into a profitable association with racing other than just a hobby type thing. But there again, it's a very expensive business, and unless you have the support and backing, it makes it very difficult to deal with today's, you know, environment.
I've often wondered, you know, with people like you and me and Amos and others who've been around horses all of our lives, that why is there such a gap between these people who put lots of money into horse racing? For example, Barry Gordy last year bought a horse named Powers Castle for $350,000, I understand, raced that horse in the Derby. But when he came to buy the horse grew up here, right around here in Kentucky, that the agent for that horse was somebody else who was white. And all of us around who would know horses and configuration and business of everything about it, why is there such a gap between the people who have the money to invest in horses, who are African American, and they then invest in horses? For example, MC Hammer, he invested in a horse, and then of course there were no black trainers. Lucas trained his horse. He had a Philly Light that won the Kentucky Oak. Why is such a gap?
Well, there again, I think it goes back to where we, in the beginning, where we talked about the opportunity afforded blacks. We've known black riders that we know were very skilled, who was unable to get the live mounts, horses that had opportunity to win. Young trainers that had all the skills and the teachings of some of the best in the nation, who was not given the opportunity to take on a stable because they knew that they had to overcome so many obstacles in the administrative end of mm-hmm. racing, dealing with the racing secretaries, opportunities to get stalls, entering your horses and right. all this, and even some of the good, prominent trainers and riders has actually mentioned or said personally to me, you know, if I thought you'd get a shot out there, I'd give you a chance. As I point out, one of my brothers, Eddie, trained horses for Calumet Farm. He was actually the licensed trainer for Calumet Farm here in Kentucky. The person that afforded him that opportunity was not the owner, but he was connected in the Calumet farm industry that he had influence with recommendations. He recommended my brother to do this. Started three horses at Churchill Downs. After the fall meeting at Churchill Downs, the stable went to New Orleans where win races. Some of Calumet's horses win, but it was a public stable and he had horses for other owners. On coming back to Kentucky that spring for the spring meeting, these horses were removed from that stable. And the person who had afforded him that opportunity told him in my presence that I let you have horses anywhere but Kentucky. Never again can I do that. In other words, he was disciplined or chastised for giving him that opportunity.
Look on this, Larry, just give me your final note as to what do you feel about horse racing, your involvement in it, and what you see to be the future for African Americans, particularly African Americans at the owner-trainer level.
Yes, ma'am. All right. I think that as I've mentioned earlier, that my interest will always be toward racing, whether I have opportunity to really involve in it as I would like to. I think that the future would have to go back to those who are able to afford the ownership of horses. Now, something has happened in racing that's very new in the game. There's where people consolidate mm-hmm. and own partnership interests in racing. I think that's the greatest opportunity that the African American can take part in.
Syndicate,
mm-hmm. Where you can get the quality type horse to deal with quality racing. The purse structure has developed to this unheard of type purses being offered, and unless you can get that class of animal, it limits your opportunity. There'll always be blacks in racing. I think that, again, we have to be supportive to our own.
Yeah.
This has happened in the Hispanic community. We know about the white, even to female owners and trainers and riders syndicating their talents and effort.
Sure.
Has
right.
made a great headway in the racing industry. And I think the future for the black in racing is to come together. I think even, this associates from our homes and families to our churches, our early learning, to our education process. We must come together to be economically sound in that area.
Before you leave, I want you to say a word about our good friend who passed away last summer, whom I consider to be one of the top men in racing that I've ever known. That was Tommy Long, Mr. Crawford.
Mr. James Crawford, better known as Tommy Long. Again, being born in the community, that the same community Tommy Long and his family were from. I've known him all my life. He and my family members were very close. The talents, the skills these people had are gone forever. I mean, so much they couldn't pass off. Those that were around them on a constant basis learned so many things that a lot of our veterinarians out there who are practicing don't know about horses today. These people had a form of giving themselves. They would give when they didn't have to give. They would give all they had in support to another. The guy that was down and out, you never seen him turn away from these people. The very talented people that knew them would use their expertise sometimes very, would just take it from them. They would advise and give their recommendations or their skills and support and help to them. And once they get what they wanted from them, they'll go away.
They got misused. And Tommy was one of those.
Tommy was a prime example of that. I think that
he had that potion that he mixed up called the Tommy Long.
Oh yes, I
nobody,
know.
Nobody even knows what that's made out of.
And so many of my great uncles who were skilled horsemen, one who lives in the retired now from racing, who lives in the California area, was with the top major trainers and owners of the California racing circuit, Edmund Miller, who is in his 90s now. These people had a knowledge of the thoroughbred to just by sight contact, they could determine deficiencies in them. Not being educated as to knowing the proper names and components of medication to thoroughbreds, they could actually just smell it and almost tell you what it is and what to use it on. These people had some of the skills that if you could uncap, there's no telling how far they could have gone in the racing. Tom Long was one of the people that had this talent, and they'll long be remembered. They are legends all over the country, and as recent as his death some year or 2 years ago, that people who had thought they knew, who had known him for many, many years, 30, 40 years, didn't know his name was James Crawford. They only knew him as Tommy Long.
Thank you very much, Larry, for spending all this time. This has been one of my better interviews, and thanks again, and wish you great luck.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.